Dr. Finn, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And thank you very much from the Ennis Family Medical Centre, of course. I just wanted to go back, before we get to some of the questions that have already been coming in from listeners, I just wanted to discuss, in just very briefly, a discussion that we had earlier on with Professor Brian Lawler. This is about the Dementia Understand Together campaign. Mm. If I fear that I may have dementia, if I fear that somebody in my life, somebody in my family may have dementia, is a GP an appropriate place to go?
Yeah, absolutely. Because what we, you know, well, first of all, there are many different causes of dementia. And one, Alzheimer's is obviously the most prominent cause, but a lot of dementia can be actually related to lifestyle, okay? So blood pressure changes, diabetes, obesity, all of that as well are triggers for multi-infarct dementia or vascular dementia. So from that very basic level, keeping healthy is very important, you know, so that you reduce your risk of developing types of dementia. So that's one thing.
And without going into too much of the science, when you say different types of dementia, I'm only thinking of, when I think of dementia, I'm probably only thinking of Alzheimer's, to be honest.
Yeah, and I suppose most people do, but Alzheimer's is the most common form, but there are several other forms. There's a form related to Parkinson's, there's a form related to behavioural changes that a certain part of your brain, but actually quite a significant amount of dementia is related to what's called multi-infarct or vascular dementia. And that is about tiny mini strokes that happen repeatedly. They're so small that people don't notice them, but it's causing blood vessel damage to the brain, so the blood supply has been cut off, so the brain deteriorates. And so it's really important that people remember that you may not be able to do anything too much to kind of ward off the possibility of Alzheimer's, but you can do a lot to kind of ward off the possibility of other types of dementia. So that's the first line, you know, so again, it all goes back to preventative
reason to be generally healthy.
And be healthy. But if you did have yourself or a family person member who was maybe a little forgetful or finding it difficult to find words or making lists for themselves because they know that they, you know, really need it. Now, we all make lists, but you know, just feel that they're struggling a little bit more, getting lost on the way to a familiar place. It's simple little things, and it may be kind of flitting in and out of it. We do an assessment. And the first thing we do is called a mini mental state exam. And it's a series of questions, and it's a formal set of questions and a formal investigation, and we score people then. Now, the questions are a bit ludicrous, and you're almost embarrassed asking people.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, who's the president, and what day is it, and what month is it? But there's other things too, like questions about remembering certain objects. You say three things and then ask the person to say them back to you later on. And also very small little maths tests, you know. So it's a very, very good standardized scoring system to see if somebody is suffering from early stages of dementia. And then we refer on if need be. There's medication for early stages of Alzheimer's. Benefits are kind of small, but they are there. So yeah, definitely if you're worried, come and talk to us, because there are things we can do.
And then obviously you're referring, I would presume, those patients on to, if they do need help, to specialist care, I would
imagine. Old age psychiatry in particular, or geriatric care. You should really come as well, particularly if you're young, because there can be other reasons why it can happen. You could have deficiencies, say B12 deficiency can cause kind of confusion in some situations. So you, what you may think is and be terrified as the sign of dementia may actually be something else that could be very curable. So, you know, it's never be too scared to talk about it, I suppose. That's the important thing.
That question that test you referred to, and the question, who was the president? Yeah. A friend of mine was in hospital, he's American, and his dad, an older man, was in hospital in the States.
Oh.
And woke up, and a young doctor was doing probably a very similar test.
Yeah.
And I said, sir, what year is it? He said, 2017. And who's the president? And he said, son, you don't want to know. He passed. We've got a few questions in already, and I'm just going to get to some of those now. Marcus thinks his hearing is getting worse. He tells me he's in his 40s. Got an occasional ringing in them, and there is a history of tinnitus in the family. The ringing happens only, though, from time to time, but he reckons that the hearing loss or the worsening in his hearing is constant and noticeable. Are there any preventative measures, anything he can do to protect his hearing? And if so, should he be doing them straight away?
Yes. The tinnitus can come. Tinnitus is a ringing or kind of a noise in your ears. And it can come from several different simple things, including just wax. You know, so if you had wax in the external canal, that can cause kind of a buzzy or uncomfortable feeling in your ear. It can also come from fluid in behind the eardrum. which could be from a chronic head cold, chronic sinusitis. So there's little things like that that could actually be blocking hearing and be preventable and be treatable.
Okay, so not necessarily in the ear either then?
Yeah, well, they're in the ear, but it's not the mechanism of the ear that's okay. affected, if you know what I mean. So it's not the nerves or the hearing itself, it's actually physical gunk blocking the ear. It's a great word, that. So that's the first thing. And also have a proper hearing test, have a proper hearing assessment and find out if your hearing is actually significantly reduced. It happens with age, it does decrease. It's very important to address it because you miss out on an awful lot. You become very isolated if you can't hear. And even in this, usually it starts in a simple way that you might be in a group of people and not be able to hear properly because there's other background noise. And that often leads people to avoid social situations. And then they, you know, the simple things about putting television up too loud and other people giving out to you, you know, little things like that. So if he's worried about it, I definitely would have, first of all, an examination to make sure the ears themselves, there's no actual treatable condition there, and then have a hearing test.
Okay, and when you say that the test will, I'm presuming you're comparing the patient with kind of what would be expected for their age?
Yes, that's what it is. You have kind of standardised kind of the kind of, there's different levels, decibels that actually you'd expect people to hear at different amounts. And actually at a certain age you do lose, and I know you probably know these tests that they have for adolescents hear differently to...
Yes, I've
Now, that might be in lots of different ways and could open up a whole different conversation. So your hearing does change as you age. So
any protective or preventative measures or things we shouldn't be doing?
One really, really important thing is not to be exposed to loud noises, you know, at a long period of time. Wearing headphones regularly at volumes that are too loud, not a good idea. Exposure to kind of, you know, very loud concerts, that kind of thing. It definitely does damage your hearing. And then recurring ear infections and problems around chronic sinus issues and all can affect your hearing as well.
Helena has been struggling to shift a persistent cold cum cough for the past fortnight, like I would say about half of us.
I would say the whole country is in the same situation.
So for her and everybody else, any advice? Helena is particularly interested in natural remedies, which I think you are too.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say the first thing is just remember that a cough is actually your most natural remedy. It is how you protect yourself. You're coughing to get rid of the phlegm and production of mucus that is developed as a response to the virus that you have. So a cough is not always a bad thing. A cough that's persistent and miserable and hurting you or making you bring up blood or has dirty looking sputum at the end of it needs maybe to be treated. But a cough because you have a snotty nose and it's dripping down the back of your throat, is a good thing. You're actually, what you're doing is your reflex is there is trying to clear the mucus from actually getting into your chest. So it's good. So don't be afraid of a cough. Generally, I would say like rest, paracetamol, warm drinks, vitamin C, zinc, all of these things do have an effect.
So lemon and honey, that sort of stuff. You know, you're a fan of echinacea?
Short term and not for children. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was recommended, well, it wasn't, but it's been actually actively not recommended for children now.
Okay.
We know that echinacea is quite powerful and it actually can increase your production of white cells. So in a long term, it can actually decrease your natural production of white cells.
So don't overdo it.
Yeah. Okay. So, but definitely in the short term. But actually, the most practical thing you can do is steam yourself. Have a bath, have a shower, do the old-fashioned bowl of water and a towel over your head and clear that production of mucus. And remember that, you know, a cough bottle is only useful if you're actually helping it, you know. Likewise, if somebody ends up on an antibiotic, all you're doing is killing bacteria with an antibiotic. You're not clearing the phlegm. So so you have to actually kind of help yourself with that.
Okay.
And with children in particular as well, try and kind of help them bring up the phlegm.
So do the other bits in tandem with the
cough
bottle.
Exactly. And expect it to last maybe 10 days, 2 weeks, maybe a cough can linger that long.
Okay.
I have to say as well, obviously if a cough lingers beyond that, you have to have it investigated because it could be something more natural. nasty. But
so about 2 to 3 weeks will be your threshold.
Yeah, absolutely. But okay. So many people, we are, every second person in surgery at the moment is coughing and spluttering. And miserable.
It's going around, as they say. And I don't know if that's the case for our next caller. Joan's 5-year-old daughter regularly gets coughs. They sound chesty in nature, in the main. Joan herself has asthma and is wondering if this is a sign that her child could also be susceptible. Is asthma hereditary?
It can be, absolutely. Very often what you see with asthma, especially with children, what you see is every time they get a head cold, it goes into their chest. And this is how the parents will actually explain it. And you'll see these will be children that might kind of be seen more frequently in a surgery than another child.
Yeah.
So it may be, if the child is getting a cough frequently and it sounds chesty and they're getting congested in the lungs, then it may be that they have a kind of background of asthma. If they do, we treat it, we put them on inhalers, and it's usually short-lived. Most kids actually grow out of it. You put them on preventative inhalers and kind of an inhaler to actually help them open up the airways a bit, and you'll find they do an awful lot better. So don't be afraid of a diagnosis of asthma, because very often it's mild, it's temporary, and if you have a family history, yes, there is a kind of a likelihood that it's there.
But at what point do you as a parent go, okay, this is more than just a cough, because kids get coughs all the time. We think we as adults do it. Kids get it more?
Oh, absolutely, because kids get head colds all the time.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
But that's what I was saying just before this question, is that most coughs are from a head cold, is from snot going down the back of your throat and making you clear your throat. And it can often sound very chesty and very very congested.
Particularly in a child, I would have thought, because they don't have the deep vocal range.
Exactly. Yeah. And they actually have very narrow little tubes that they block very quickly. So I suppose what I would be trying to say is don't be too alarmed by coughs. But if you have a child that gets a cough that frequently needs to be seen and needs to be treated, and particularly if that child has been put on steroids or antibiotics for a cough on a frequent basis, then maybe it's not the parent, but the doctor may then say, listen, maybe there is something more here. Look at the pattern of this. Is this a nighttime cough predominantly? And if it is, that sits with asthma. If the child has the cough at times when they're not unwell, but when they go outside or they run around or they're exercising, again, that would fit the diagnosis of asthma. A lot of children cough rather than wheeze with asthma. So it's watching the pattern of it and watching how frequently it is a problem.
Okay. If that's of any use to you, and I hope it is, thank you. We're happy that that is the case. If you've got questions for Dr. Moore, then do send them into us 086 1800 964.
Clare FM's Morning Focus.
In association with Frank Hogan, Mercedes-Benz Limerick. Serving Clare and the Midwest. Your local Mercedes-Benz dealer. Visit frankhogan.ie for exceptional offers.
Sound worth €220, a €100 voucher for Specsavers Audiologist, George Michael is our featured artist, and of course the Big Country R, plus lots more. So why not join me at midday today? I know, it's official, I'm sad.
In association with Shanahan Paints, Clonroad Moor Ennis, and Smithstown Shannon, bringing new life and colour into your home and business.
It's hard to put into words how racing makes you feel, but you feel it. When they charge past the stands, you feel the vibrations on the soles of your feet. When your horse is first past the post, you feel your feet leave the ground, you raise your fist and you roar. Plan your day at the races, because nothing else feels like this.
The Limerick Christmas Racing Festival runs from Tuesday 26th until Friday 29th of December. Book online at limerickraces.ie or call 061-320-000.
Hi, my name is Gary, and I've come through some really difficult times in my life. I started to run small little amounts. It was slow, but it was great. Running, it's my be-all and end-all in terms of managing my mental health.
When we go through tough times, little things can make a big difference to your mental health. Visit yourmentalhealth.ie. Brought to you by the HSE.
Glower is the heart of arts and entertainment in Clare. See our winter programme for great nights out, including Mike Denver and guests. Tommy Fleming, Neil Delamere, Foyle Arms and Hog, David O'Doherty, Keith Barry, the Kilfenora Cayley Band, and Clare playwright John O'Donovan's smash hit play, If We Got Some More Cocaine, I Could Tell You How Much I Love You. Also, don't miss Halcyon Days in the Glore Gallery. For bookings, call 6843 103 or glore.ie.
Hi, I'm Mairead Lavery, and this week's festive issue of the Irish Farmers Journal has something for all of the family. We've 10 pages of TV listings. We've €2,000 worth of prizes in our bumper Christmas quiz. There's fun puzzle pages for the children. And you can win tickets to Taylor Swift and Michael Bublé in our great GAA quiz. Plus, don't miss our fodder supplement outlining how to manage winter feed on your farm. This week's bumper edition of the Irish Farmers Journal is on sale now.
Okay, Bord Gáis Energy, Christmas gift, take one.
I remember one Christmas, my wife bought me this beautiful pocket watch. It had a lovely gold-plated case. Something you'd pass on from generation to generation. I won't myself. I switched it for a new sat-nav, actually.
Ah, the old Crimbo switch. Feels good, doesn't it?
Sure does. I'd be lost without it.
Well, switch to Bord Gáis Energy before Christmas and you'll get €175 back and 10% off electricity. It's worth thinking about. A Christmas switch? It helps if it's Bord Gáis Energy. Discount over standard unit rates for 12 months with level pay and paperless billing. See boardgoshenergy.ie for full terms and conditions.
Clare Spring would like to wish their customers a very happy and peaceful Christmas and New Year. Clare Spring, where every drop is drawn from organic land, just as nature intended. Winner of the FBD Excellence Award for Best Use of Technology 2017.
If it matters to you, let us know. Contact us now, 1850 400 964, or email focus@clare.fm.
You're welcome back to the programme. Dr. Maura Finn is still with us from the Ennis Family Medical Centre. Dr. Finn, we were just talking about coughs. Yeah. And I would say that it is in the aftermath of that that this texter has been in touch. My daughter is off work, this woman says, on a second antibiotic in a month. Should she try to do without the antibiotic?
Well, that's difficult to say because obviously I haven't examined this girl.
It's for bronchitis, sorry. Does it just another text in from the same person?
Okay, all right. Well, if she's bronchitis and it's persistent, now you can have, you see, if you've had an infection, you can have a persistent cough that you don't, that is just the remnants of the infection and your body's still trying to clear it. But it doesn't mean that you're sick. So what determines whether you need an antibiotic is whether you have a temperature, whether you're unwell, whether you're... aches and pains, you know, do you have bacteria that is making you significantly unwell, or do you just have cough? So that's the problem, and that's the problem that we as doctors face this time of year, because we see an awful lot of relatively healthy people this time of year because they're worried that they don't want to be sick for Christmas, and I understand that.
Yeah.
And what we do, and you know, this might shock listeners in one sense, but doctors generally do this, we very frequently give antibiotic prescriptions to hold now
in case you need it.
Yes. And when I do that, I always explain, you don't take this or you don't give this to your child unless you have a temperature, you're very unwell, the symptoms deteriorate, unless the, you know, the sputum changes color, you know, you explain all this. But I think sometimes people go, okay, I've got this prescription, that's great, I'll go and I'll fill it. So it's really important to kind of keep in the background that, you know, a cough is a symptom. It's not an illness. So, you know, if this girl is unwell enough to be off work, I suppose maybe she does need it. But it's, you know, there's several different things that you have to put into context here. And that's what you always have to do. Try and do the simple thing first. If the symptoms are getting worse, if the person is getting worse, if they're significantly unwell, then an antibiotic is valuable and sometimes warranted, but not always.
You talked about helping the cough bottle for bronchitis. Is everything that we talked about before just as applicable with regards to steaming, with regards
absolutely
to the,
and
the,
you know, the hot water, etc.? The steaming and that kind of helping yourself clear the phlegm is more valuable than 20 cough bottles.
Okay.
Because you're actually bringing it out. With a cough bottle, all you're doing is trying to kind of maybe loosen it up or open up the airways a little bit. But, you know, so be practical about it. Be kind of dynamic about it. Do something yourself about it. This is the thing. I think sometimes people think that, you know, you have a problem, there's an external solution always. It isn't always that way.
Okay. A quick question, as another listener puts it. My resting heart rate is between 70 and 90 when I wake up. But when I get up and walk, maybe downstairs and up again, or I do a small bit of housework, it goes up to 110 or more. But after resting for a few minutes again, it's gone back down to 80 or 90. Should I get it checked, says this person, who also tells us they stress a lot.
Okay. I would think that the fact that they stress a lot, it could be quite significant in this, and I would also wonder why and how do they know that they're resting heart rate is at a certain level. And
well, you have these watches that tell you your heart rate every time you look at them, if you so wish. Oh, I'm not saying that's definitely the case here,
yeah,
but...
I don't necessarily think that's a really good idea, okay. You know, because your heart rate fluctuates depending on what you do, and it's meant to, and that's how we function, you know.
I think they could, sorry to cut across you, I will go back to our listener. I think that they could have great prospect. I would love a situation where I could go to the doctor with one of those devices and say, there's, you know, as opposed to checking my blood pressure and my heart rate right here, right now.
Yeah.
This is what it's been like over the last 48 hours, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And that's a very good idea. There are kind of home monitoring for blood pressure, but they're proper sets. They're up on the arm. They're not on the wrist. You know,
they're pretty accurate, though.
Well, I don't know if the blood pressure is accurate
on
the wrist.
Okay, that's fair.
The pulse would be, of course, because we read the pulse off the wrist. But if this person is a little bit stressed or anxious, then they're just adding to that by constantly monitoring it. Now, that said, you know, level your heart rate going up above 100 repeatedly is not a good thing. It can be a sign of other underlying conditions. It can be a sign of thyroid, an overactive thyroid, anemia. Other things can be a cause of it. So, you know, maybe if this person is worried, they should go and check it. But I would suggest that it's probably relatively normal and that they should stop maybe monitoring so often, because that in itself will actually cause
stress.
And that's why home monitoring of blood pressure in particular is really important, because it's a well-known fact that there's a thing called white coat hypertension.
You cause stress, yes.
I personally cause the stress. I know I do.
I think health insurance companies should sponsor those.
Maybe they should.
And if you can prove that you are meeting your targets and you're active enough, you should get cheaper premiums, because they won't have to look after you as much.
That is a very clever idea.
It's literally, you know, if I can try and demonstrate that I'm healthy.
Yeah, and try to promote health as opposed to treat illness. Yes.
VHI, you can have, I was going to say if you have it for free, no, they can't. But they're welcome to the idea. We can do talks. I'm sure it actually has been done elsewhere, so I can't take full credit. Anne is wondering, we talked about this earlier, is it safe to take echinacea whilst breastfeeding, and in what form is it best to take? She keeps getting recurring impetigo infection.
Impetigo?
Yes, infections, and she's heard that echinacea is good for this.
Oh, the poor thing. Impetigo is a miserable thing. It's a skin infection. It's called by staphylococcal bacteria. She's run down, obviously, you know. And when you're breastfeeding, you do, everything you take in practically goes to the baby.
Of course,
it's a really good thing. I wouldn't take echinacea when you're breastfeeding. I would actually, breastfeeding, you treat exactly the same as pregnancy. You don't take anything that hasn't been completely verified as being safe within pregnancy, because it will go through to the baby. And as I said earlier, we know echinacea, you don't give it to kids. So I wouldn't do that. But echinacea or impetigo, if you get it recurringly, I presume she's been treated with an antibiotic for it, because you do need an antibiotic for this, because it scars and it spreads like wildfire, and the baby could get it as well. But if it's recurring, you often need a little nasal cream, because you store the bacteria that causes it in your nose sometimes and under your nails. So make sure your nails are cut really short, and get it's called Naseptin, would work really well just to make sure it's cleared from the nose. And that would be probably much more valuable than trying the echinacea.
Hope that's of use. Best of luck, Anne. Nuala is wondering, is there a cure for chronic constipation after surgery? I don't know if there would be, but to me that sounds like going back to the surgeon, potentially.
Well, do you know, after surgery, your bowel can actually kind of get very lazy. Now, it's one of the things they actually always insist on anytime you have any kind of abdominal surgery, that you have to have had a bowel motion or pass wind before you could actually leave the hospital. But if it's chronic constipation and she has had bowel motions but they're slower, it's the one situation where I would say maybe taking something, you know, like Dufalac or one of the over-the-counter products is probably not a bad idea. Normally, I'm not in favour of those. I always kind of go with the dietary approach. But after surgery, she's not active. She's not able to do the things that are kind of, you know, you'd normally do. Because the more active you are, the more you move around, the more your bowels will move as well. And that person is probably kind of bedbound at the moment. So
one more for you. It's coming from me.
Okay.
Is Christmas bad for you?
Christmas couldn't be bad for you.
Well,
overeating, overdrinking, all of that might be bad for you, but Christmas is good for her. Santa's coming.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. We got to be active, I guess. Is that what?
Do you know that's the thing? Some people are lucky enough, Gavin. You and I know that we're not, but some people are lucky enough to have 2 weeks break for Christmas.
That's definitely good for you. Yeah,
and I'd say that's great for you. But I think it also does usually involve an excessive amount of food and drink, and probably quite lazy behaviour, and that's not good for you. And people do. It's actually the time of year when people are unwell too. You know, and then you're in kind of like big groups of people and you're passing viruses from one to another. So sometimes, you know, that's why it's so busy for me for Christmas, because people get
people
sick
are unwell, yeah.
And people are terrified to get sick. But yeah, you know, stay active. Go for a walk Christmas Day.
Christmas Day?
I do. Go on.
Stephen's Day.
Definitely go for a walk on Stephen's Day anyway. And don't overdo it.
And one of the listeners, sorry, I should go back to this. What is your opinion on the use of steroids for colds and for flus?
Only when somebody has a very, very tight chest, as in a wheezy chest, but they're very effective in that situation. We use them sometimes as well with bronchiolitis, which is when very small babies get kind of congested. It's questionable whether there's nothing else we can do sometimes, and it's to try and keep babies out of hospital, you know. So they're prescribed in certain circumstances, but if they're prescribed, I would take them because it's obviously considered necessary.
As always, our advice is just that. If you've got concerns about your own health, please, please, please do get yourself checked out, even over Christmas. Dr. Morfin, compliments of the season to you and yours. I hope it's a nice and happy and
thank
peaceful
and
relaxing.
Thank you, and can I wish everybody happy Christmas? It's a great position to be able to wish the county happy Christmas. So.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for joining us this morning and across the year. We've more to come. We'll be back shortly with more in Morning Focus.
Clare FM's Morning Focus.
In association with Frank Hogan, Mercedes-Benz Limerick, serving Clare and the Midwest. Your local Mercedes-Benz dealer. Visit frankhogan.ie for exceptional offers.